It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 91% always.
Yes, Steven Brown.
Yeah, it goes up like 2% every week you're here.
Yeah, I'm trying not to miss any shows.
Yeah. And Dave Redfield is back.
Hey, how you guys doing?
It's been a... I don't even know how long it's been. It's been a while.
I think it was Avengers.
The first one?
Like, Age of Ultron. No, Age of Ultron. When we had like 9 people dressed up in masks.
Yes, it was when Avengers 1 was published.
Yeah.
1963 was the last time Dave was on.
It's been a long time.
Traveling has been very hectic on my account.
Yeah.
And you have one arm.
Yeah.
Well, he still has two arms. One of them is just like a gimp arm.
Yeah. I broke my arm trying to stop a fight. All in the name of justice.
It seems like if you break an arm stopping a fight, you become the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so you're definitely involved in the fight.
It's like staring into the abyss.
Yeah, the abyss turns back, Dave.
And broke my arm.
So, I had no segue. I thought I had a segue into this.
But there's no way we could cross over from what we were talking about to what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, I've just proven that we can't do what we're supposed to be doing.
Wait, isn't a segue like literally just being like, hey, we're going to talk about this now?
Yeah.
You're just looking for like a better one than...
You're just trying to find an organic way to do it.
Nah, fuck that. Our topic today...
Here's an organic way. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, our topic today is crossovers of how we're taking disparate things and putting them together.
Yes.
In something which we completely failed to do just now, but it is...
We're good at our jobs.
They're not even jobs.
They're hobbies.
We've never been paid
for this. Then we can't be wrong.
That doesn't make any sense. You could build a birdhouse wrong.
Can the bird still eat the food out of it?
No, you can build it in a way where the bird cannot eat the food out of
then
it.
Then you've done fucked up.
And that can be your hobby.
But you know what? No matter what we do, people can listen.
You paid what you get for.
Yeah, there you go. You pay for it. That's good. All right, yeah, so crossovers. Because we couldn't figure out what to talk about today.
No.
So many crossovers out.
Yeah, there's a lot. At the time we're recording this, Batman... The Robin War just happened. In fact, we were talking about, hey, why don't we do one about just Robin?
Yeah.
And then we started thinking about crossovers, and they were like, that Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles just came out and sold out at least at your shop.
Yeah, at all the stores. I mean, not all the stores they are, but all the Chimeras.
All of these stores that you own. Yeah. Not all of these stores in the world.
All the ones I'm responsible for, they've sold out.
And Secret Wars is still going out. That crossover.
Yep.
Been going on. That's been like issue 8 after a year.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah. So,
And there's still another issue coming out at the end of or midway through January.
So there's always something. That's the thing about comics is no matter what you're reading, no matter when you're reading, eventually you're going to come to a big event.
Yes.
Where everything is going to cross over. Whether it is in your book, and now you have to read a book that you don't usually read.
Right.
Or if there is a series that now everyone has to read.
Yeah, and it didn't used to be like this, like in olden times. The crossovers just used to be like JSA and Justice League. Used to just be, it wasn't a crossover, but it's like, all right, let's put all the guys in one book.
Well, that was the big deal about The Flash of Two Worlds.
Yeah.
The Silver Age issue, which has this famous cover of a guy with an I-beam about to crush him.
Yeah.
Because that happens.
All the time.
And Barry Allen's running to get him, but Jay Garrick is also running to get him. That was a huge deal because nobody had ever done that.
Yeah.
And in fact, before Justice League, Batman and Green Lantern and Flash and Superman were seen to be in different universes.
Yeah, they didn't really... It was like... You didn't think, just because they were published by the same company, we take it for granted now that Thor knows Iron Man and all these other guys, but back in the day, it wasn't necessarily true, unless there was no reason for you to think that because they had never made comics before.
Yeah, well, like, what was the first crossover that ever? Was it that, Secret Wars, or are we talking about
I mean way back, like
that
I said,
Flash,
and then the when the JLA met the JSA, and I think in that one, like, Flash was already like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah.
So I think that came before those. But then they started doing those every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they would do, like, random team-ups between those two teams.
Right, and that was called Crisis on Two Earths. And then when Marvel started, because Stan was writing everything,
yeah,
it happened really quickly. I'm trying to think what the first one might have been. I mean, Amazing Spider-Man number one has the Fantastic Four on the cover.
Right. And I think a lot of that was Marvel hedging their bets, being like, well, you might not like Spider-Man, but Fantastic Four sells really well, so the first
put
issue
him
of
on
Spider-
the cover.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's a lot like why, you know, pretty much every, if you read any book from the 60s and you read the first 10 issues, they all fight Dr. Doom. Like, because it was like, you couldn't go, I mean, Spider-Man fights him in like issue 4 or 5.
He does.
Yeah, because it's like, that was their big guy.
Dr. Doom's angry.
So he ran up against everybody immediately, just as like, well, we don't have to make up another guy. We'll use
huge
that
pissing contest.
Yeah,
we'll like, use who that are you, shit. Iron Man? Boom.
Yeah.
And that's what we were saying when we were talking about Fantastic Four maybe coming back to Marvel Studios. I was saying on that podcast, I don't even think they want the Fantastic Four. I think they just want Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Because Doctor Doom is their big guy.
And I think if you flash forward, it's interesting to watch the movies do what the comics did 60 years ago or whatever, where it's first, here's an Iron Man movie, and maybe we'll team it up with the Avengers. Then he teams up with the Avengers, and everyone like loses their minds. And the next natural progression of that is teaming up with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then the next step of that will be bring in Spider-Man, work a deal out with Fox, bring in the X-Men. They might get to do that huge company-wide crossover.
They might get to do the Secret Wars.
Right. Or even, you know, do something where if they can work out a deal with Fox, they've already got Spider-Man worked out with Sony. Depending on how Civil War does, and I'm sure it'll make a buttload of money, Fox is going to want a little of that, and I think it wouldn't be hard for them to think how to get the X-Men to team up with.
Right, and Batman versus Superman is what DC's hinging their entire cinematic universe on.
Right.
And that, again, that it was commonplace in the comics to do that.
Right.
But it was only, it was all guest appearances in each other's comics until the 80s, really. Because there would be, you know, Nick Fury would show up in the Fantastic Four.
Right, he'd show up in, like, Tony Stark would show up in S.H.I.E.L.D. or
right.
An Iron Man, Fury would show up and be like, yeah, I designed the hover car or whatever.
Right, and that was just a way of
linking everyone.
Creating a universe.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was the first limited series, I believe, in comics was the Contest of Champions.
That was before Crisis?
Yes, that's like 81. It's not that good.
I've tried reading it, and it's cool. It's the first book I remember looking at that was the crossover formulas. They have like the hints of it. They have all the ingredients, but they haven't mixed it up right. It's like, here's a bunch of guys from all over the world. Here's like a Russian superhero. Here's a girl from Ireland dressed as a shamrock. Here's Sunfire. It was like, they grabbed all the American superheroes you'd think of, like Daredevil and Fantastic Four and all these guys, but then they grabbed, like, here's a guy from South America who's a superhero that you've never heard of, and here's a guy that showed up in one panel of X-Men that's like a Russian guy.
Well, the story behind that was that it was supposed to be one of those Treasury editions. They used to do those really big comics, like...
Star Wars.
The adaptation of Star Wars was like that. It was this big, huge one. And what it was supposed to be was, it was supposed to be a Marvel tie into the 1980 Olympics.
So they
created all these superheroes from different countries, so all of those were brand new.
Oh, that's actually really, that's like so much more interesting.
And then America boycotted the 1980 Olympics.
God damn it, America.
Because
of Russia.
Russia. So it sat on a shelf for a little while, and then they were like, well, it's just, Jim Shooter was like, what are these pages doing? Get them out. And so they just put it out as a limited series because the Treasury editions were on their way out.
Yeah.
So it was the very first time that a number one comic book came out where they said, yeah, there's only going to be a couple of these and then we're immediately going to stop.
Yeah, which normally if a series started, they ran it as long as they could.
Right. At that time, people saw high issue numbers as a barometer for success.
Yeah.
They said back then, number ones didn't sell very well because people were like, is this even going to be around?
Right.
And
when like Superman was on issue like 300 yeah, or something, you know?
You could count of Superman being around a year from now.
Yeah, Action Comics was in, like, the 400s.
Yeah, but that did well. So then they started to think, and interestingly enough, Contest of Champions was done for the 1980 Olympics. Then Secret Wars was done for the Mattel toy line, which people forget was that those toys, well, by the time those toys came out, they were so late and so cheap.
No one gave a fuck.
That people thought...
And they, let's be clear, they had nothing to do with the comic book, because like Falcon and Daredevil figures and Hobgoblin got made, and those fucking guys aren't even in the series.
And they all had lenticular shields.
Yeah.
But the, when those came out, it looked like Mattel was just like, oh, that's their big comic, that's a way to get Marvel out, and there hadn't been Marvel figures since the Migos. But Marvel actually designed that entire series for the toy line.
Yeah, because, but wasn't it also to compete with Crisis on, like, they got wind that DC was doing a big crossover?
Yes.
When did Crisis on Infinite Earths happen?
85.
85, but Marv Wolfman had been planning it for 2 years, because that, and there's plenty to talk about with Crisis. We'll definitely get into that. But that is such a big, complex series. Yeah. Whereas Secret Wars is like, here's a planet where nobody is.
Secret Wars is made up. Is a 12-issue instruction manual on how to play with action figures. I mean, it's like...
Pretty much,
and
yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love Secret Wars. The original Secret Wars is like, maybe call it a guilty pleasure, whatever you want to call it. I love that series. I'll reread that every couple years because it's like, it's got great art. Everyone you want is in it. You know, it's like, there isn't anyone they left out of it.
Well, I was 12 when it came out, and Secret Wars is what introduced me to the whole Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So I kind of, as much as I don't like crossovers, I kind of have to thank crossovers, because when I got into Marvel, I got into Marvel through their licensed comics. I got Indiana Jones and Star Wars because I liked Indiana Jones and Star Wars. And my friends were reading Marvel, and they were like, well, you got to read the X-Men. That's really great.
Yeah.
So I picked up X-Men, and then I was like, well, I used to love the Spider-Man cartoon. Oh, here's the Spider-Man, and he's fighting this guy, the Hobgoblin. I'll buy that. And the next month, both of them went into the Secret Wars, so I was like, oh, I guess I got to read these Secret Wars. And then I found out who all the Avengers were that weren't on Spider-Man and his amazing friends, and I got to find out about villains like that I didn't know existed, like Fantastic the Wrecking Four. Crew and the Absorbing Man. Yeah, the Fantastic Four. The first issue of Secret Wars was really interesting for me, because the Fantastic Four I remembered from the animated series that came and went. The Hanna-Barbera one in the 70s, the one with Herbie the Robot. The Hulk I obviously knew. The Spider-Man I obviously knew. Everybody else was kind of a blank slate.
Yeah. But like, you didn't know who, like, Ultron was or Galactus.
No, not a clue.
The Beyonder.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And even some of the Avengers, I didn't know who Hawkeye was.
Yeah.
I knew what Captain America and Iron Man and Thor were because they were rerunning those cartoons. But by the end of those 12 issues, I was...
You knew everybody, yeah.
I was reading everything Marvel except the guys that weren't in the Secret Wars. I was like, fuck you, Daredevil.
You don't matter.
Yeah, you didn't make the cut. Power Man and Iron Fist. Power Man and get the fuck out of here.
Besides making money, though, like, what is the real intention of, what do you guys think a crossover is supposed to do?
It's hands. And now, right now, all it is a, it's a money machine. It's all the companies being like, I mean... Pretty much since like House of M, they do one every year because it's their big book. It puts everyone on the thing, and then it's their way of directing all their story arcs. You know, so it's kind of like a yearly like goal for the company to hit, where it's like, all right, well, this year we're gonna get rid of all the mutants and we're gonna make the X-Men prize again. So all the books can deal with that if they want to. Then it was Civil War. Then it was this. Then it was that. So they kept going forward. It's like a company just meeting so that they can sit down together and decide the general direction of where everything's going.
Like change the status quo.
Right. Shake everything up.
And that
now they're doing it to where it's, well, Marvel especially is like, all right, here's a chance to do a whole new mess of number ones and swap creative teams.
And that comes from Secret Wars, because coming out of Secret Wars, every one of those characters had a major change. The biggest being Spider-Man's black costume, but then you had She-Hulk on
the Fantastic Four. Yep.
You had...
I think, isn't that when the West Coast Avengers?
No, they were in 85. They're a little later. But you have Kitty Pryde and Colossus breaking up afterwards.
Yeah.
You have like... you had all these little things in the book, and what they did, which was brilliant at the time, was... Issue one came out, and it was basically they're all in this portal, and then they land, and then they fight. But then every book after that, like a weird thing was going on, and there was a little asterisk that said, you have to read the Secret Wars. And you have to read them all year, because Spider-Man's in a black costume, which we will not explain until issue 8,
yeah,
which will be like August. So that's what kept people coming back.
And we may have talked about this before, but Secret Wars wasn't the only book Marvel put out when it was coming out. They still had like monthly Spider-Man and all that other crap.
No,
right?
in fact, none of those books even missed a month.
Okay. Because I read somewhere that they like put everything on hiatus for the entire year and
like
they only
the
put out
Secret Wars?
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's not.
All the books kept coming out. Secret Wars was just another book they put out with everything else.
Yeah, it was literally like the December issues came out.
Yeah.
And then January, the first week Secret Wars came out. And then the February issues all came out, but they all dealt with it. There was no break for, say, Spider-Man between 251 and 252. It was the last page on 251. He like goes into the portal.
Right.
And then the next month he comes out of the portal and he's got this costume. And you're like, what? Where did this come from? And you're
should've read Secret Wars.
8 months later.
They're not even like, should've read, like, keep reading.
Yeah, because it was 8 months. It's like the eighth issue he gets the Spider-Man costume. Yeah,
it's the eighth issue.
Yeah. But so, like, even like Iron Man didn't go. It was,
it was
Rhodey in
with
the Iron
roller
Man
skates.
Armor. Yeah, well,
right.
Yeah.
But at that point, Rhodey had been Iron Man for a while, and he would be Iron Man until after Secret Wars 2.
Well, after Secret Wars, yeah.
So, and in fact, West Coast Avengers is after Secret Wars 2 because it's Tony in the silver armor.
Centurion.
And that first.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Although there was a limited series because they found out Contest of Champions sold, Secret Wars sold, so they started doing other limited series. There was a West Coast Avengers limited series, and Rhodey was Iron Man in that.
Yeah, I think
and
I
then
read
when
that.
They by the time they brought it back as a full series, Tony was back.
Yeah.
But that is kind of the thrust of every crossover. It's like, we're going to change things. Something major is going to happen, and the only way you're going to know what's going to happen is by reading this special series that we've just put out over here.
Spend lots of money. Because that's like a thing customers always are like, oh, what's going on? It's like, oh, there's this huge event going on. Do I need to read everything to read it? And obviously, you know, 9 times out of 10, the answer is no. But, you know,
but customers you never know what
need
that
to
is.
Know. Yeah,
we were just talking about, you mentioned the Robin War. And Robin War is, it's like a 1 month event, I think. It's really
good. But it ties into Grayson, ties into Teen
it's
Titans,
gonna fly
ties
all
into
the
everything.
But that's the problem with it, is it ties into one book that I'm reading religiously, one book that I was on the fence about leaving because they wrapped up their story arc to go into it, and then four books I don't read. So I was like, maybe I'll skip it. But then today, as we're talking about it, it seems like, oh, it's starting to sell out. I'm like, oh, then maybe I should read it. And I said to you, I was like, I don't know if it's one of those. There's two types of crossovers. I don't know if it's one of those crossovers where there's a Robin War number one, where everything happens in that book. And then the other books are how those characters react to it.
Yeah,
or
like little
if
side notes.
Yeah, which a lot of them do. Or if it's chapter one, chapter two,
chapter
three.
It's chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. That's how it's gone.
Right. So now I'm on the fence about, do I skip this issue of Detective? And I have an unbroken run of Detective from like 1971. And then, or do I buy Grayson and We Are Robin that I don't read?
Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Red Hood and the Outlaws. Oh, they're all the shallow
so
end of the
many
bat
bad books.
Books
come out.
Yeah,
I know, and I already read too many Batman books. I'm still reading Batman and Robin Eternal, which I hate.
Yeah,
which is not actually a crossover. I think weekly comics are a totally different thing.
Oh yeah,
let's not even talk about how much I hate this book that I'm on issue fucking 10 of.
You're hate reading it.
Oh, not even hate reading it. It was like I had to go into the city. So I picked up like the 6 books that I had left over because I can read those on the train, and then the train gets stuck and I'm reading all of them going, oh, I don't like,
I don't like
it
this
up.
At all.
And now I'm halfway through.
And none of those tie into the Robin Wars?
Not Eternal, no. But all the other,
Batman,
pretty much every other Batman.
The first Batman Eternal didn't tie into anything.
Because it's a weekly, they can't.
And that was the thing. I thought that Batman Eternal, that first one, was like, well, there's so many Batman books and this is a weekly. This is going to be your big crossover event. And it never was.
I thought the Batman Eternal book was supposed to be like the Bat book. It's like, you want Batman characters? They're all in here, and it comes out every week.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like your weekly go-to. Everything you want for Batman is in here. The first one was like that, where it's like all the villains show up at one point or another. It's like, it's kind of like Hush, but it takes a year. Yeah.
But the problem with that was there were stronger stories going on in each of the monthlies, and none of them touched in, because I kept thinking, well, I read Batman and Detective, and I think Dark Knight was still around. And I was like, I read all those books, so I'm not going to know what's going on, because as we're talking about crossovers, that's going to be the main story, and it wasn't.
And it's hard because, like, that happens a lot. I think House of M was the first Marvel crossover. I was just like, I am buying everything tied into it. And slowly I'm like, what a horrible mistake
I made. That was not a good one to choose. I learned that with Secret Wars 2.
Yeah,
which was so god awful.
Oh, and that wasn't even the first Secret Wars was nice because it's a self-contained 12 issues and that's it.
Yeah,
the Secret Wars 2 was like a book that tied in through like a dozen titles.
It
was
now, why did Secret Wars 2 have to come out?
Because Secret Wars 1 did so well.
But the problem, and I remember being very excited about Secret Wars 2 because I loved Secret Wars 1. And what they said was, this one's going to take place on Earth. And I'm like, oh, that means that they're going to wreck New York and not just a made-up alien planet.
Yeah.
And it eventually, it ran 9 issues. I believe it event every single book that year at least had one Secret Wars 2
And it was basically like the Beyonder'd show up with like his disco Jerry curls.
Yep.
Would mess a bunch of stuff up, and then like the hero would be like, that sucked, and then he'd go and do something else.
And the book and the Secret Wars 2 book was, after that first issue, it was the Beyonder's monthly title.
Yeah, it was like
and
him.
Nobody liked the Beyonder.
Yeah, he's not even good in Secret Wars. What's cool about the Beyonder? Well, Doom stole his superpowers and became Super Doom. That's the best thing about the Beyonder.
And that's a Doom story, that's not a Beyonder story.
Right, no one gives a shit about
him. The Beyonder's the MacGuffin in that story.
Exactly.
The Beyonder's just like, hey, I've created the space for you guys to fight, but they spend really Secret Wars just fighting each other.
Yeah, they do very little.
And Doom attacks the Beyonder because it's a very Doom thing to do.
Yeah.
Just to get off the board and attack the player.
But that's something, you know, going back to, like you said, with House of M, I remember when that came out, right around the time I had been reading comics for a while because I started like around like Heroes Return.
Ooh.
When like Avengers came back.
Not Reborn,
was
Return.
That? Return? Reborn was
the Image books, which were terrible.
No, Return when they came back after Onslaught.
And those were great books.
And I had a couple issues of like Onslaught crap, but I really started getting stuff monthly when it was like, all right, here's the Avengers. I skipped Iron Man. I wasn't reading that for some reason because I was stupid and I wasn't looking at like writers. I was like, I like the Avengers. But so when they switched to Geoff Johns and then, you know, it led right into House of M and the new Avengers. House of M was a book where it was a great story. Like, I liked these 7 or 8 issues they did, but there was too much stuff coming out to where I couldn't afford to get all the tie-ins and crap. So it was just like, all right, I got the main book. And that's a policy I kept for all the crossovers where I read every monthly, yearly book they did. You know, if they did Civil War, I figure if it got its own title, it's worth reading. But if it was like an X-Men book where it was like, I don't know, Messiah Complex, where it ran through 40 different X-Men books, and it wasn't its own dedicated book, it couldn't be worth reading.
Yeah, I had the opposite. I just walked away from House of M when I saw that coming because I was like, it's the Avengers, and I wasn't reading New Avengers at that point. I eventually went back and got the hardcovers of it. But I saw that coming from a mile away, and I realized that I got into a pattern in the 90s of there were so many events was like, I would just sidestep them.
Yeah.
And then I'd come back when they were done and I would figure out what had happened in it. But at that point I was willing to miss the 3 issues of my favorite title to not have to buy all
to
this extra
with
stuff.
It, yeah.
And I did it with Batman because in the 90s there was a Batman crossover every year.
Well, there was what the,
it starts with Nightfall.
No Man's Land, Cataclysm.
Right. Well,
and War Games,
most of those are pretty good as far as crossovers go. Because there was Contagion.
That was a Ra's al Ghul virus.
Yeah. Well, Contagion was so-so, and it was a story about how there was just a plague in Gotham, and most of the stories were about like people getting sick and how to contain the virus, and like Robin gets sick in the middle of it. And I actually have an original page from that storyline in the room. It's a Microwingo Robin page that I've had. That I got at a convention since the 90s.
And you'll have forever.
Oh, yeah. The glass is cracked from a move, but but I still won't replace it. But that story was meh. But then a couple months later, they realized, oh, it's Ra's al Ghul. And then the Legacy story was great. And then they had, but then they had an earthquake, which was Cataclysm. And that's when I was, at that point, I was living on my own, barely making the $400 in rent that my apartment cost. And I can see Steven blocking the hate in his eyes when
No, that blows my mind because your rent is higher than mine.
Really?
Yeah, my rent's under $300 a month.
Wow, no wonder you live very far away.
Yeah,
from
and I'll never ever move.
But
you were in like New York and this was like the 90s.
This was the 90s. I had one roommate. I didn't really have a job. I was writing a comic that was going to last about 2 issues.
Yeah.
That was my job. So I saw that coming and I was like, well, I'm out of this. And then No Man's Land I was out of. And didn't come back. But then going back,
well, how many Batman books were around during No Man's Out? There must have been like four straight up Batman by itself. It was like Shadow of the Bat,
Nightwing, Robin.
Well, not excluding those. Like, I'm just talking about like
Batman, Detective, Shadow of the Bat, Legend of the Dark Knight. There was a Batman book every week, and then there was Nightwing and Robin. I think Birds of Prey had not started yet. There was a Catwoman book.
Yeah, there was a Catwoman.
There was an Azrael book. Yeah. There was a lot. There were a lot of books. Batman. Well, the thing about Batman in the 90s is that Batman is totally driven by the Tim Burton era of movies.
Yeah.
So it was the only character getting movies. So
he had the most books. I mean, it's pretty much from the 90s till today.
Of any solo character, really.
Yeah.
Because I remember No Man's Land, like, I was picking every single up because that story was continuously going on.
And that was a full year.
Yeah. Oh,
that was every Batman book every week from January to January.
Yeah, we missed No Man's Land, but we got the graphic novels for it. It was the original printing, it was 6 volumes for No Man's Land.
I have the reprints, which is 4, but they're thicker. Like,
they include the Nightwing.
They're like epic collection size.
Yeah. Right. Because they include Robin, Nightwing, even a Teen Titan tie-in. Like every single
Superman tie-in they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a JLA tie-in.
And that's the trick, and this is something, I guess, coming back to how they do it now versus how they used to do. Crossovers used to be... to me, it always is something like the most successful writers are going to take the idea of, like, Civil War and incorporate it into their monthly book seamlessly. Peter David's a good example of this. Civil War, take it or leave it, was a decent story. Not the best thing Marvel's ever done, not the worst.
I would say Civil War is the best crossover they have done in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
But still not the greatest.
Not the greatest.
I did come back for Civil War because I was starting to get deeper in, and
it was probably their most successful dollar amount.
Which is why they keep harkening back to it. But the big difference between House of M and Civil War was that all of the tie-ins for House of M were limited series.
Yes.
So I was reading Straczynski's Amazing Spider-Man at the time. Wade did a Spider-Man House of M tie-in.
Oh, yeah.
I just avoided it.
Yeah.
And I just kept going with Straczynski.
That's a smart move.
Yep.
Never noticed that it happened. Never noticed House of M happened because I wasn't reading Bendis' Avengers. Now Civil War happens.
Right.
Straczynski does 6 issues of Spider-Man House of M, and then Fantastic Four. Straczynski's on that too.
He's
doing 4 or 5 issues. And so I cannot avoid this. So I have to read Civil War.
But I don't mind those because I think that's a decent idea for the company. Like I said, Peter David was on X-Factor at the time when Civil War came out and did 1 issue of X-Factor dealing with Civil War. It was phenomenal. It was just like, oh, they were still in the middle of their own story, but they had to stop to deal with some Civil War bullshit. And I think that's interesting from an editorial and like a writer standpoint, is the editor say, look, try to tie your book into the big event. How would your characters react to this thing happening? Without shoehorning it and being like, well, they wouldn't care. No, it's like, if they did or they had to, how would they? I think it's a good challenge for the writers and to be able to take a break from whatever they're dealing with in their monthly book to then deal with some Civil War stuff or Acts of Vengeance or whatever's going on. I think that's an interesting way for the writers to remember they are playing in this bigger world where if there is a story that's going to be more important or their big company-wide thing, like No Man's Land or something, it's interesting to see, all right, No Man's Land's going on, not a Superman story, but what would Superman do if No Man's Land was really going on? Well, he'd probably fly over there and try to take care of it, and then the shit would blow up in his face.
That is a great single issue, too.
And it's one of the best issues they did.
That's a Legends of the Dark Knight issue. It's not even a Superman issue.
It's not even a Superman book, but it's a Superman. Well, basically,
he's the main character in that issue of Legends of the Dark Knight.
And it's stuff like that I really like, where don't beat us over the head with your crossover bullshit, but it is an interesting take to say, you know, all right.
Maximum Security. When they put like 3 issues of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that crossover. And you're like, why is Spider-Man even dealing with aliens? Why can't he just punch Rhino in the face?
Right. But I think that's interesting where it's like the whole premise of that Maximum Security was, all right, every galaxy, every superpower in space is getting together and turning Earth into a penal colony. Well, that would mess up Spider-Man's day. So he's on his way to go fight the Rhino, but now here's 60 aliens tearing up Times Square.
You know, when you mentioned Peter David, I think that's a great example of a guy handling crossovers because, you know, he quit X-Factor in the 90s because of crossovers.
Yeah.
Because back in the 90s, we were talking about how Batman was so popular in the 90s
right.
that he could have his own crossovers of his whole family titles. The X-Men...
That's all they
everything
did.
Everything they
if
did.
If you look at... I do not collect any back issues of the X-Men. And the X-Men was my favorite book in the 80s and then again in the 90s. I have not a single issue of an X-Men comic because they've done such a great job of the omnibuses. So I have omnibuses that go from Jack Kirby to Neil Adams to Dave Cockrum. And it's kind of an unbroken run. And eventually will be from the 60s through the 90s. But if you look, they eventually stop saying X-Men Volume 1, Volume 2. And yeah. each one just has the title of the crossover the for that year. Because really there were like three...
Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, there were like...
Onslaught.
Onslaught, Executioner Song, The Extinction Agenda, Inferno, The Fall of the Mutants, The Mutant Massacre, The Phalanx Covenant.
They
got into a point where if you read those omnibuses, you got like three or four issues of X-Men that aren't part of a crossover because everything was either a come down or a build up. And, you know, those were eat up issues of just, there'd always be an issue at the end of the crossover of everyone in the mansion going, oh man, that was messed up. Wasn't that messed up?
You guys want to play softball?
Yeah.
Let's go out there and play some softball.
So you can actually collect all of the omnibuses of the crossovers and have an unbroken run of X-Men. And Peter David said every time he tried to get his own storylines going, they'd be like, oh yeah, that's great. Stop now because Strife is punching people.
Yeah, and I think that's where that's like the flip side of it of where, you know, in the 2000s when they were doing this, it was less, even though they do a stupid amount of tie-ins, it was less you have to read every book. And I think...
Well, they learned their lesson from the 90s. Because what happened with the 90s was people were doing what I was doing and just bailing. And I think the big piece of shit in the room that no one's mentioned is the Clone Saga.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's Clone Saga hemorrhaged readers because it was two solid years of no resolution and it tied into every single Spider-Man
just dragging
book
it out
all the time. And they were like, hey, if we don't end this story, readers have to buy these issues, not thinking that readers can just stop reading Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's kind of silly looking back. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, whatever you want to say, but the idea that they were like, people read it no matter what. And it's like, no, if you don't finish this story and you dick people around, the people are reading comic books rarely. I mean, now it's different, but it's kids who don't have a lot of fucking money. You know what I mean? It's like, that's why I was reading Avengers as a kid, because it had everyone
well,
in the
yeah, that's
book.
Why those books existed. Like, those team books was just right. Like, oh, instead of buying a Batman and a Superman and a Flash comic, I could just buy a Justice
just
League.
Just get huh? Justice League. And, you know, that's something...
And Justice League was their bestseller in the Silver Age because of that.
And that's exactly why. And you think they kind of remember that and stop trying to, like, bleed us dry. But you
especially
know,
when they're $4 a book.
Right. And especially now, like I said, it's something where it was one thing... You know, when they were $1.25 or 35 cents or whatever, because people lose their minds when I complain that they used to be $1.25. But, like, it's like every issue of Secret Wars is like $5. And it's like, it's not as much story as you were getting in the 80s or the 60s. It's 22 pages and half the pages
right.
Well, are like
it's as much art, but
yeah,
the storytelling style now
is
as they say, decompressed. So you get like one action set piece and some moving the plot ahead.
Yeah.
You're getting like, I would say where in the Silver Age, you would get 20 minutes of content in 12 pages.
Yeah.
You're getting about 5 minutes
well, it's
of content
like, you know,
in the whole issue.
You think about it now, it's like the first issue of Justice League of America, Raven the Bold 22, whatever, they fight Starro the Conqueror. If Starro came back, that would be like a month. Like, that would be, like, their big, like, for the whole summer, that would be, like, their event. Starro the Conqueror. They would never do it in an issue like they did.
Well, you look at it... I think even clearer example, the first issue is an issue of Brave and the Bold, not even Justice League, where they fight Starro, and I don't think it's a full 22 pages.
No, because
there's
probably
a backup story.
Yeah.
Whereas in the New 52, six issues of them fighting Darkseid.
And nothing fucking
Darkseid
happens.
Doesn't show up till issue 4 because the first issue is just Batman meeting Green Lantern.
Yeah. And it's like that's something they would do in a panel in the 60s.
Right, which is why these crossovers never have to end.
Yeah.
Because... I eventually soured on the modern crossovers with Civil War. I came back for Civil War. I was really excited about it. I was enjoying where it was going. And then the last issue was completely deflated and had no resolution. And I was like, how do you write a story like this? and then the ending of the story was in Captain America, a month later.
A lot of people were really upset about that.
But that's also a big problem with crossovers. This also happened with Batman and Final Crisis. If you're going to do something major, like kill a major character, do you want it to happen in their own book that they've had for hundreds and hundreds of issues? Or is it this book that we just made up for this week?
It just seems like if you're going to do something like that, you have to, like, the death of a character has to go to the story.
Well, so it where depends did the story on the character, come from? Right?
You think so? You think Cap should have died in Cap's
book? That's what I'm saying. Black Goliath gets murdered in Civil War by Klor, and then they murder Captain America, which is really the significant death of that book, and they do it in his own book. You know, so it's like if a character has their own monthly, it's like John saying, oh, the major thing is going to happen to that character in his monthly book. And I think that's the problem.
And most of these examples, his monthly book is dealing with that limited series for the run that it's in. Like, every issue of Captain America before he died in Civil War was about Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he's already involved in that story.
And I think that's the trick. And, you know, that's kind of the new problem what they do with crossovers is where every crossover just is leading into the next crossover.
Right. That the final issue of every crossover has just been, this is the status quo. This is what we're going to do. Norman Osborn is head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, that was Secret Invasion's ending was just like, who took the shot? Norman Osborn. What does that mean? He's in charge of the Marvel U now.
Here comes the Dark
Ride. And that's a story that didn't get resolved until Siege, the next crossover, the next year.
Yeah. And I think that's the real trick of it is, you know, it's one thing if you have a good idea for a crossover and you want to do a big event. I get it. It's great. It's they're normally pretty decent because it puts everyone together and it's usually an A-list team. But a lot of time it's like, fuck it. Fear itself. Let's...
Original Sin.
Or Original Sin. It's like they don't have a good idea. So they ask around to see what idiot has a, you know, half a cooked idea. And they're like, all right, great. Do Original Sin. Do Fear Itself. We got a Thor movie and a Captain America movie coming out this year. All right, well, let's take a Captain America villain and give him Thor superpowers, and that'll be our crossover for the year to tie into the movies. And it's like, when it's no longer about telling a good story, they suck. When it comes just about like the company trying to do it. At least with Secret Wars, the new one, it's an idea, whether or not Hickman has an ending, which, let's be honest, he probably doesn't. It's something he's been building up for years. And it's something where...
To be fair about Hickman, he's been telling one story...
Through all his books.
With every book he's done, yeah. Because I read only his Fantastic Four run, because I'm a Fantastic Four fan.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like I started in the middle of something with his first issue.
Right, because a lot of his stuff started... He started laying the grounds in that S.H.I.E.L.D. book that no one ever read that he did.
Right, and Secret Warriors.
Secret Warriors.
And I read the first two issues of Secret Wars until it took a left turn and became a what-if story. And then I was like, I don't want to read what-if stories.
Right.
But his first two issues were all about his Fantastic Four characters, and... As a fan of that book, I was like, oh, yeah, these characters are back. But I realized it's probably not a good place to start. And that was the Zero issue, which he wasn't even going to write. And then Marvel was like, nobody's going to understand this.
Unless
they've read everything. It's almost like he's the most brilliant fan fiction writer ever.
Right.
Where he's been writing his own universe within the universe.
And he got to do all his stuff. And you know, right. And he's had whatever this idea he has is something he's carried through all his projects. And you don't really see anyone else doing that. So it's kind of like, all right, well, when you finish this big, big story you're doing, fuck are you going to do?
Yeah, it's admirable in a way. But,
yeah. Well, it's interesting.
Well, he's not, there's nothing publicized on the world of Marvel that he's doing after this.
Yeah, there's nothing solicited by Hickman.
Right.
So he's
so I guess this is a story.
Yeah.
Well, and the biggest problem I have with his modern Secret Wars is that it's so late.
They added
an issue and then they missed a few months. It is so late that the books which were supposed to come out of the final issue of Secret Wars are on issue 4.
Some of them are coming out with issue 5 this Wednesday.
Yeah, and we still don't have the final issue. And what that taught me was I read Iron Man and I read Amazing Spider-Man. That's all I'm reading from Marvel. But I'm 4 issues in and I realized I really didn't need to read the Secret Wars because I'm not lost at all.
Yeah, and that's the...
I think that's a good thing, though. I think, like, the cool thing about, like, the all-new... This whole entire new directions Marvel's going in, it's like, if you didn't read Secret Wars, because a lot of people just didn't.
And
Number one, they didn't understand it because they weren't reading Avengers. Number two, all those other tie-ins, like the what-if worlds, like, you know, like Battle World Captain America where he's like fighting a bunch of Hulks or whatever. Like all those books, people are just like, what is this? I don't understand it. It's like, it's a what if story. Like you could buy it or you could not buy it. And the majority of people chose not to buy it until like the new Marvel wave come in. And if you pick up, and I've been reading each one, each number one, it's like Iron Man, nothing really with Secret Wars. They don't talk to anything that comes out. Same with Spider-Man, same with Ms. Marvel, same with the all new Avengers, Thor. Same with Thor. And it's like, so that's kind of a riveting thing. It's kind of nice to be like, okay, now I'm back into the Marvel.
Well, it's a little bit of both, because part of it is a lot of the customers are saying, and John mentioned, is like, you know, people say, oh, well, Secret Wars must not matter because I'm reading all these new number ones that are supposedly take place after Secret Wars.
Like 6 months after.
Right. Right. So it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't even need to finish the story. Now, the story is still selling or selling out every time we get a new issue in, but it's something where it's nice. If they're going to do a new number one, it should be accessible to people that aren't reading the big, crazy crossover. Mm-hmm. Everyone should be able to pick up that new Iron Man.
And I think that's what they're doing. I think that's great.
Yeah, agreed.
And that becomes a big question is if we're not reading this because we have to.
Why are we reading it?
Well, we should be reading it because we want to. Right. So as you were saying, Dave, is it a good story that stands on its own? And when it is, it's as you were talking about, Stephen, how about the event just leads into the next event, which leads into the next event. It's almost like Marvel has a book on its slate called The Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And that changes its title every year. And it's like, well, this year the Marvel Universe title is Secret Invasion. Next year it's Siege. And then it's going to be Civil War. And it almost becomes the Justice League of the entire Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And as we know from team books that have heroes that have their own solo books, the Avengers, the Justice League, sometimes they tie in, most of the time they don't.
Right.
Like I haven't read Justice League in probably 3 or 4 years, and I've never been lost reading Batman.
Yeah, and you know
even
what?
Though he's in it every month.
And same thing, all I'm reading out of DC right now is Justice League is the one I'll be reading monthly for as long as it's bearable. And it's something where, yeah, I don't have to. It's not even in you could argue it's not even in the same continuity as the Superman or the Batman book.
Well, you were saying with Batman right now, for people who aren't reading Batman right now, like Bruce Wayne has amnesia, doesn't know he was ever Batman. And Commissioner Gordon is like this.
He's like Iron Man Batman.
He's like a he's like an Iron Man Batman, although lately.
On a police budget.
Lately they've been using him out of that suit of armor, and he's got his own like Batman suit.
Yeah.
It's an interesting story. It's not the best story that this team has done, but I'm with it. And it as you were saying, in Justice League, Batman's just Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, and you know the same thing's true in pretty much every. And I'm reading there's two main Justice League books out. There's the Brian Hitch fan fiction, his own continuity book, and then there's the regular Justice League book, which is its own continuity.
Is that
book.
Still Jeff Johns?
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
The last time I looked,
it was, and then he left, and now it's like a different. I don't even know who's writing it right now, but it's
Jeff
something
Johns
where
needs to stop doing monthlies because his day job is very
so
demanding.
Many books, that Jeff Johns wrote. It's
although
sad.
I will say, in his defense and in defense of crossovers, I enjoyed Forever Evil.
That's a good example,
and it didn't really tie into anything.
Nope, but it was. I think it was a good story. It had a lot of nice. Yeah, stuff in it they were doing.
They used it to launch an event of Villains Month, which was thematic rather than plot driven.
Yeah.
So, as a Batman fan, I bought all of the villain one shots that month, and none of them had anything to do with Forever Evil. They were just about the villains. But there was a good story. I think it was 7 issues. It's a good story from 1 to 7. It was like a big Justice League story.
Crime Syndicate Justice League.
That story like came out of the Trinity War when all the Justice Leagues were.
But I didn't read
other.
Trinity War.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to.
And I don't feel like I need to.
And Trinity War wasn't bad, but it was something. And I think that's a good example of a book like Forever Evil, where it's in the middle of this new 52, which is a continuity nightmare. And it's something where, like you said, 6 or 7 issues, whatever it was, it's an excellent story from beginning to end. You know, it was kind of like the last really good thing I remember Jeff Johns writing that I liked.
It was the only major crossover that the DC Universe has done since the new 52.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Convergence, if you kind of can count that.
Yeah, that seemed like
or
a
the Dark Side
side.
War.
That's
Dark Side
what
War
in
was just
they're
Justice
in the middle
League.
Now, but that's just the Justice League.
It wasn't like the Batman titles or Aquaman tied into it. It was a big Justice League story.
You know, it's really hard for crossovers because to like when you got someone says, I have a story to tell. That's great. That's great. And it's like, I want to tell it in my books. How about we tell it in every book? Because when you read something like the Sinestro War, you know, when the Green Lanterns were fighting the Sinestro Corps, That was a great. That was a great book. That was only tied into what, two books? Just
Green Lantern Corps. And
then Blackest Night comes out, and I was just like, yep.
And Blackest Night was the next story in that Green Lantern saga.
It came out of that,
and then they were just like, what if everything tied in? What if Batman and Aquaman and Teen Titans were fighting Black Lanterns? And I liked Blackest Night because I was a Green Lantern reader.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, this is the next step after that Sinestro Corps.
It's like a trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I was only a Batman reader at that point, like I am now,
yeah,
and I read that just that Batman limited series, I'd be like, what the fuck? This is just a zombie Batman? Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what you see from the subscriber's point of view is, you know, we've got all the subscribers at the store. You know, for the most part, everyone's reading DC and Marvel, and then there's a subgroup of that that's just reading DC or just reading Marvel. And pretty much in all three categories, I bet across the board, it's the same people are all reading the crossovers. So when DC did Convergence, not everyone was signed on for it, but almost all the guys who were just DC were reading Convergence. And then half the guys who were probably reading DC and Marvel were reading it. Now, the same thing with Marvel. Everyone who subscribed to just Marvel books, they're all reading Secret Wars. And a lot of the guys subscribed to DC and Marvel books are all reading Secret Wars. Because they'll read the main book, but they're not going to get all the Battle World crap or the, I don't know, whatever else nonsense is
tying
into it.
Which is, like, the best. Like, I think if you were to ever, like, for the next crossover that comes in, I would only read the main book or anything else the writer is also dabbling in. Like, I thought that was the one thing that helped out for when Hickman was doing Infinity. Like, the Avenger books were great. And then, like, the other, like, the actual Infinity title and any books that Hickman had his hands into.
Yeah, but that's another one of those books where Infinity was, like, 6 or 7 issues, but then there was other
the
stuff.
The Mighty Avengers tie-ins.
Well,
and
the
all
tie-ins,
these
not so much, but like the books he was writing, Avengers and New Avengers, those books were more important pieces of the bigger story.
Yeah.
They weren't necessary, but it was nice to be able to read those as they were coming out with the main title.
They always filled you in, because if you're like, Captain America runs over here and Thor does over there, and you're like, where's the other Avengers? Well, read New Avengers. And then there you're reading, and it's like, Hawkeye's talking to like Spider-Woman. Carol comes by and offers them a ride to go get coffee or something. But like, it fills in with information that you're just like, where are the other guys? Where is the plot going? What's the other stuff that's going on in this, like, this huge battle? And that was great, because obviously it was all Hickman, so he had control.
He knew what
of it
he was
all.
Doing. Yeah,
yeah. Although I found in this Secret Wars, as I said, I bailed after issue 2, but I read Dan Slott's Renew Your Vows.
Right.
Because Dan Slott's been the main Spider-Man reader, and I had been without a Spider-Man book for a while.
Yeah.
Because these titles were on hold, and I was in a big Spider-Man mood over the summer, and I ended up spending that summer buying a lot of back issues because I couldn't buy Spider-Man.
That hurt a lot of people. A lot of people were just like, where's Thor? I'm like, I have this book called Thor's. But where's the Jane Foster story? You have to wait till Secret Wars.
Right. But then one day I was in a comic store and they had all the issues. So I was like, I'll grab all the issues. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because it was a writer I liked. It was an artist I liked. Not the main artist on Spider-Man, but Adam Kubert is an artist I enjoy. And it was a story that had a beginning, middle, and an end. And I feel like that's what we come back to with these crossovers. Are they just carrying the baton across the year and, you know, boosting sales and then passing it on to the next thing? Or is it a story that, and I think it's case by case.
It is. Yeah. And I think in the, you know, it's like when Marvel used to do the crossovers in like the late 80s, mid 90s, it was all the annuals were always like the crossovers, like Atlantis Attacks or shit like this, which they're terrible stories. But, you know, when
the High Evolutionary War.
And it's like, you know, they wouldn't be bad stories, but it seems like if it's all in an annual, you can skip it.
You
but it's like
easily skip.
It's but when great. It's its own title, like Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it's 12 issues long, and it's every character's involved, and it's this huge thing, you know, that's something. Or when it's like the crossovers between the companies, like JLA Avengers was 4 issues, but they were oversized. They do a good job between the inner company crossovers where they're rare enough to where the novelty of it will always make the book sell.
Right. And with an intercompany crossover, they really can't affect the continuity of either of the
right.
books. So the intercompany crossovers tend to just live on their own, and they're a book on their own. As we said, Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is out today, and I was thinking, should I get the first issue? I was like, well, I can get the trade.
Yeah.
So it's not like 6 months from now when the trade comes out, I'm going to miss out on something.
But like you said, you know there's nothing they're going to do in that book that's going to affect.
They're not going to kill Raphael in this book.
Right, exactly. And nothing significant is going to happen to Batman in this book.
Right. And there have been some crazy ones, which have been really fun, which people go back to. I mean, everything from Superman versus Muhammad Ali that Neil Adams drew to Archie versus the Punisher.
Or the Predator. Right.
Yeah, the Predator to Star Trek versus the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these definitely lean towards fan fiction.
Yeah, and I think that's something where it's always, those are good stories because they're just, then you have the opportunity to just make the funnest story. Don't worry about trying to shake things up or change characters. Just tell a really fun story.
Right.
You know, JLA Avengers, we've kind of talked about it. It was Kurt
Busiek. That's a great one.
And it's probably my favorite crossover book because it's, you know, we just talked about Kurt Busiek a couple weeks ago, but this is a guy that has an encyclopedia knowledge of both DC and Marvel, and he's writing a book and saying, as a fan, what are the things I want to see the most in this book?
And he's a bigger fan than I am.
He's a bigger fan than both of us.
Exactly.
And
three of us.
Yeah, all three of us. And he'll write a story where everything you didn't know you want to happen in a crossover book between the two biggest groups from the two biggest companies, he does.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think another intercompany crossover can happen now?
Yes.
Well, I mean, we have Batman Ninja Turtles happening right now. But
do you think something like Marvel and DC? Do you think like those people have enough?
Yes.
Stuff together. It'll happen where again they could because
over? It'll happen when they need the sales. Right now, they don't really need it. We got those crossovers. They began to happen in the mid 90s, not in the early 90s when sales were great. It happened in the mid-90s when the crash was beginning to happen, was we started getting, we got Batman Spawn was the big one because Spawn was outselling a lot of Marvel and DC at the time. It was very early, and McFarlane got Frank Miller to write a new story. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's just...
there's two of them, aren't there? Isn't there a DC version and an Image
right,
version?
Right, and DC ended up doing their version. And then once that happened, the gates were open. There was Batman Captain America. There were two Batman Spider-Mans. There was Batman Punisher. There was Darkseid Galactus. There was Superman Fantastic Four. There was DC versus Marvel.
Yeah, there was the one where they did like the voting. You got to vote. All right, we're going to have Aquaman fight Namor. Fans vote who wins. And that's interesting. You know, it's stuff like that where it's like...
That's pure fan fiction. I mean, they're actually asking the fans what they think.
Right.
There's a fight between Lobo and Wolverine that Wolverine wins, and the creative team can't figure out why, so they fall behind the bar, and only Wolverine comes up.
Yeah. And it's stuff like that where it's like, it's cool to see them do it. I think we will get it. I mean, I think JLA Avengers was the last big crossover between Marvel and DC, and that's probably over 10 years old now at this point, probably more like 12.
And sales were bad back then. And I remember at the time, I was kind of almost out of it. I was reading JLA Avengers, and then the next thing that everyone was reading was Hush.
Yeah.
And
Hush was huge.
Hush was huge. Yeah. That
Green Lantern Rebirth came out. Civil War came out after that. It's like all these big books.
So when they need to do it. Yeah. I mean, in the 70s, there was a bit of a slump. The 70s, there were all the big Treasury editions, as we were talking about. Conscious of Champions was going to be the next one. But we had three different Superman, Spider-Man books in the 70s.
Yeah.
That Ross Andrew drew. We had a Batman Hulk, which...
Yeah, because that makes fucking sense.
Yeah, it makes sense at the time. It's actually a great book because I believe it's Len Wein and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Yeah.
So the book itself is great.
Beautiful, yeah.
But it's when the Bill Bixby Hulk show was on and Batman was still riding on the Adam West show. So it was clearly...
It was like their second two most popular characters.
Yeah, it was clearly the B team was like, well, we already did Superman, Spider-Man. So it was, who's your second guy? Oh, well, Batman's our second guy. How about Marvel? Well, it's the Hulk.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been Batman versus The Thing.
A couple years before would have been Batman versus The Thing, and now it would be like Batman versus Captain America.
Oh, man, but poor Len Wein trying to figure out a way that the Batman and Hulk fight.
Yeah.
and it'd be interesting to both sides. But then we got the third one was probably the greatest one, was the X-Men Teen Titans. And it was at a point where both of them were big sellers.
They were the books. Yeah.
But unknown outside of comics.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because that's, at that point, that's, all right, we know the general audience doesn't know who the Teen Titans are. We know the general audience doesn't know who the X-Men are because this is way before movies and cartoons and shit. But it was something where, I mean, was it George Perez did it or who?
No, it was Walt Simonson.
Yeah. Oh, Simonson did it.
Chris Claremont wrote it.
Yeah.
And Walt Simonson drew it.
Okay.
And it was, I actually picked it up. I had just become a big X-Men fan and I went to my first comic book store, and that book was ordered so heavily that it was 4 or 5 years later, and they still had it.
Yeah.
For cover price.
Yeah.
So I remember picking it up, and it was a great introduction, the same way Secret Wars was I didn't know who the hell the Teen Titans were.
Yeah.
I didn't know who Darkseid was. I'd heard of Dark Phoenix because there were so many goddamn asterisks about the Dark Phoenix
because of fucking Claremont. Yeah.
But it was the first time I ever saw Darkseid, but also when the two teams meet, I was like, I remember only knowing who Robin was.
Yeah.
And I remember reading it going, oh, there's another Flash?
Yeah.
There's a Wonder Girl? And I was like, and I don't know who the fuck the robot is and the green kid.
Yeah.
And it was such a weird book.
And the girl
in
the hood. It was a weird book, but it was also Marv Wolfman doing the X-Men style. It's like, here's a bunch of teenagers that are misunderstood. They're out on their own, and it's very soap opera.
Yeah.
And it worked. And they had George Perez drawing.
It was outselling X-Men at the time.
Yeah.
It was DC's book.
Yeah.
Which was crazy because, I mean, this is, well, this for Batman, this is between Adam West and Tim Burton, so it's kind of a low period for Batman.
Yeah. Or Batman was kind of like Sherlock Holmes at this
point. It's also before Frank Miller had reinvented it. So the fact that it was their biggest book just had Robin in it without Batman.
It's kind of crazy.
Even at 12, I couldn't wrap my head around. I was like, Robin has a very full life away from Batman.
A new team going.
Yeah. He's the leader of that team.
He's got friends.
Yeah. Even on Teen Titans Go on Cartoon Network, there's always this kind of shadow of Batman hanging over Robin.
Not in the 70s Teen Titans.
Yeah, but they had done those, and then JLA Avengers was going to be the next one, and it fell apart.
Yeah, they've been trying to do that since the 80s.
Yeah, it was supposed to follow X-Men Teen Titans. It was supposed to be like, okay, here's our two cult books that are big sellers. Now here's our big guns. And George Perez drew about 20 pages, and those are in the Absolute Edition. There's a second book that has the script and the pages that he did. And it fell apart because of money. And the way they solved it in the 90s was like, you do your book, we'll do our book, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a very Todd McFarlane idea now that I think about
it. Yeah. Well, and two of them, like, they had a lot of disagreements when they tried to do it originally. And that's why that book's not in print right now. You can't get JLA Avengers anymore because...
Well, the way they did JLA Avengers or the way they did DC versus Marvel was, I'll do 1 and 3, you do 2 and 4... And they used a creative team that worked for both companies, so they weren't going to pick a side.
Yeah.
But it's the reprint that was a problem. The deal they made for JLA Avengers was DC would do the big absolute hardcover slipcase edition, and Marvel would do the trade.
Yeah.
And once those print runs ran out,
Marvel's not doing the trade anymore.
And you know what? DC doesn't really reprint their big slipcase absolute editions.
It's gone. And they'll do, well, I guess, because they did that big hardcover. You know, the 10th anniversary probably came and went. Like, it's gone.
Right. But so you got to bring guys to the table again, and that's the big thing.
And that's...
But that's also what saves us on continuity, because you're not going to have the Secret Wars thing of Lois Lane died in the JLA Avengers, and now Superman has to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of always indebted to Marvel.
I mean, you read JLA Avengers, like I said, it's a great, fun story. There isn't one thing that happens in it that you need to read after the fact. Like, nothing changes for not one character.
It would help if you read a lot before.
Yeah.
Because he goes, I always love the turn he takes in issue 3 where it's like, okay, I've shown you everyone on the Justice League fighting everyone on the Avengers. What if I showed you everyone that's ever been on either the Justice League or the Avengers? And while I'm at it, every costume they've ever worn.
And every villain they've ever fought.
It's intense. And that's... I feel like the reason JLA Avengers is the best intercompany crossover, I think, is the same reason Crisis on Infinite Earths. We're at 57. Let me ask this as a question, and I'll answer it with Crisis on Infinite Earths. What do you think the best crossover has been?
Yeah, and you're saying it's Crisis.
I'm saying it's Crisis because
the first one.
Because the one in the 80s.
That changed the whole entire company.
Well, because you could see the planning going into it. You could see the planning coming out of it, which was not perfect, but you could tell it wasn't sprung on anybody. And it was 12 issues. It was meticulously planned. Literally, they figured out, here's what's going to happen to Commandy. Yeah. Here's what's going to happen to the crime syndicate.
It explained all their continuity for 50 years.
And everybody knew what it was going into it. And the crossovers, there's not one crossover you need to read because all the crossovers are about shadow demons attacking a city.
Yeah.
Even Alan Moore did a crossover issue in Swamp Thing. And it's about shadow demons attacking the city. The Absolute Crisis is 1 to 12. That's it.
That's all you need.
And I feel like, and JLA Avengers did the same thing. It's those four issues. That's all you need. And it did everything you needed
and
to
do. And
that's
why I think I'll pick JLA Avengers, because it's just hearing, they have the big slipcase hardcover I have has a whole explanation about the time they originally tried to do in the 80s and how it fell apart and how hard it was to get these idiots to like come together to produce this book. It's kind of like the book that shouldn't exist but does. It's like a book that, when you look at it on paper, you know, George Perez thought when he originally drew, they have a lot of the original art from the 80s. He's like, yep, we did all this work. I worked on it for 6 or 8 months, never got produced. I really thought this wasn't ever going
to
happen.
Rob Liefeld owns that art. He lent it to them. Yeah, he bought it all at a convention, and he lent it to him for the book.
Son of a bitch. But it's something where it should.
Do you like JLA Avengers less now?
No, I like Rob Liefeld less now. Less than I already did, which was not much. But I hear he's a nice guy. But it was a book that couldn't or shouldn't have existed, and it still came out, and to be as good as
it
was. It
was a good book,
to have everything railing against it was kind of miraculous.
Dave, what's your favorite?
Shoot. To be honest, I'm just trying to figure out like a modern one I really enjoy. But it would probably go, I want to say I like House of M a lot, because Copiel was the artist in it, and it did new costume renditions for everybody. And the best thing about it, it was, I like Elseworlds stories. So it's like everything that happened in it was an Elseworlds story. Anything that was really important might have transferred over, but majority didn't. Like, yeah. Spider-Man happened to remember it, but he just doesn't talk about it. Iron Man forgot about it. Captain America apparently never knew about it. Only the X-Men were really truly affected by it. And, you know, even at that source, like, a core member knew, like they were aware, like, oh, that Wanda messed everything up, let's go find her and stuff. But that's, I think that's the real reason why I like House of M a lot. Honestly, it was just a brand new world. You didn't need to know anything prior to that. They're just like, the Avengers broke up, yeah, and the X-Men got destroyed, and this is them putting everything together.
What had a lot of good, almost every character had a lot of good. There was a good emotional beats for all the characters. Magneto, yeah. Quicksilver, Spider-Man, Wolverine, like Captain America, Iron Man, like everyone they did or focused on that book, they really took a moment to be like, all right, here's a great moment for Magneto. Here's a great moment for Charles Xavier.
Yeah, there's like that scene where like kind of like Captain America couldn't step up to the plate because obviously like his eternal wish of happiness was to just grow old. So like there's a scene where they're like, we need to recruit Captain America. Let's get him. And they're like, no, let's just leave him. Let it be. And like Cyclops had to like step up to be a leader. And there's that scene when they're like, we don't know what's going to happen. We're going to go to the Genosha. We're going to fight Magneto and everyone else who happens to be on his side. I have no idea if we could put the world back the way it is, but we're just going to do it. And like Cyclops is like, listen, I know none of you guys trust me, but I led the X-Men since I was 12 years old. Let's go do this. And you just see that huge fight scene where they all come in. And like I said, like I think Rogue taking Captain Marvel powers and like you see Nightcrawler working with the whole entire team. It's just, it was great. You saw X-Men and the Avengers working together and they were all trying to fight like one main concept.
Opposite of A versus X.
Oh, exactly.
That was the worst thing in the world.
Which was not awesome.
That's interesting. All three of ours, the main thing that we brought up was self-contained.
Yeah.
So I think we solved our problem with it. Well, you can follow me and not on my book on Twitter. That is the official Caffeinated Comics page. You can like us on Facebook. That's where we post all our news and links to our podcast every Monday. Listen to us on Stitcher, on iTunes, or go directly to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. Get every one of our episodes. Nick, who is on one of our shows, who likes it when we mention Nick's name on our show.
We're going to mention Nick in every show.
Mentioned that he couldn't find his episode on iTunes because it's no longer on iTunes. They drop us after the first 50 episodes. You get the 50 most recent episodes. But if you go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com, you can find, I think we're close to 150.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We should check so we can do our 150th episode.
Dave, how do we find you?
On the streets or on the internet, Dave Redfield. On Twitter, Instagram, and other social media events.
Steven? And I am at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!